Hey idiots, I'm Jessica Michelle Singleton. I'm a stand-up comedian, and I'm also an idiot sometimes. Aren't we all? If you love to laugh as much as you love to learn about new people, I have a podcast for you called Hey Idiots. It's 50% hilarity, 50% curiosity, and 100% insanity. My guests include experts in their field, sometimes just other stand-up comedian friends, and occasionally absolutely insane people who have somehow convinced me they're knowledgeable about a topic. If you're into expanding your mind or just laughing out loud, check out the Hey Idiots podcast wherever you listen to podcasts.
What you looking for?
That was his vape.
My vape.
Oh.
Have you checked your pockets? I know that's a dumb question, but.
Bye.
I knew his vape was in his pocket, though, because when I vaped, I would always be like, Clark, I don't know where my vape is. And I was like about to die because vapes give you so much nicotine and stuff. And he would be like, it's in your other hand.
Yeah. You're vaping right now.
Actively vaping. Where's my vape?
I texted a coworker when I worked at the group homes to see if I'd left my phone at the house. And like realized it as soon as I had sent it. I was like, God damn it.
I do that with my phone in my hand. I'm like, where's my phone? I'm having such a bad day.
Holding it. Have y'all ever thrown your phone like into the garbage, like you're going to throw something away and you throw with the wrong hand?
No, but I constantly put it in the refrigerator.
I have thrown several full expensive coffees into the trash. Just walking by, and it's always like the city street or the dumpster.
Yeah.
I'm always like, and whoop, and then I'm like, huh, well.
Fuck me then, there goes $7.
I dropped my phone into a porta potty once.
Nice.
Still there?
It's still there, huh?
Yeah. I walked out. I was drunk as shit at a fraternity party.
I wouldn't be going back for that.
I came out and I was like, my phone's gone. And Stephanie was with me and she was like, oh, we need to go get it. And I was like, we don't. it's gone.
Yep. Alrighty. And with that, we have another episode of Edging, a horror book club.
Yay.
Woo! And the music's playing now. That funky music.
We've all just heard the music for the first time. Does anyone actually remember the music, Brooke?
No.
Bridget?
No.
Me either. Should we all try and do what we think the music is doing right now?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. One, two, three.
I'm pretty sure that
right.
was accurate.
It was. Send that to Caleb. That's
be like,
oh yeah, I have a funny call out for my husband Clark. We recently saw Caleb, our composer, perform at a very lovely show next to Normal.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's the one I wasn't able to go
yeah.
to, right?
Yeah, it was really good.
How was it?
Awesome.
So you just good. Said it was really good.
The
I don't know why I asked.
I won't say the music was the best part because I don't want to like shit on anybody else, but the music was so like the live music yeah. was so fantastic. But yeah. Clark was like, Caleb's really good at music. Did you know that? And I was like, babe, what did you think he did for our podcast 13? And he was like, he just edits it, right? And I was like, no, we have a fully composed.
Yeah. But I get where he's coming from because I always know that Caleb is good at music, but every time I encounter him in different contexts, it just gets wilder. Like being music directed by him as a singer, I'm like, you like really, you know what you're doing, huh? Like you can just, he's like, what if I just like reverse it and put it like this and then I'll kind of play it backwards for you. Would that help you know what you're doing? And I was like, yeah, what? Sure. Whatever's cool.
The first episode of 13, I was so nervous before we got it back because mm-hmm. we hadn't heard anything that Caleb had done yet. And we'd had some hit and miss experiences with music. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't say we had bad experiences.
No.
But not great experiences. Definitely no one who was a professional composer. So I didn't know what to expect. And I heard that first episode and I was fucking blown away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Caleb, because I... Did we find Caleb on Facebook?
I weirdly knew Caleb from years ago, but we were Facebook friends, and I think we put a post up on like one of those like local music scene or like art scene things.
Yeah.
And someone that Caleb knew saw it and sent it to Caleb. And then Caleb got in touch with me and we were like, we know each other.
Yeah.
So. They also went to college with us, Brooke.
Yeah. Well, I think Caleb was a senior when we were freshmen.
Yeah.
So like very little overlap, but vaguely encountered each other.
Oh, Caleb went to Transy?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's how we know him.
Oh, okay.
Like, encountered each other in the same circle, sort of.
Ish. But yeah, we were walking into the parking garage and Clark's like, Caleb's really good at music. Did you? And he was saying it. I was like, haha. And he's like, no, I'm being earnest.
Yeah, in all earnesty.
In all earnesty. That was a funky, sexy, scary intro.
All of those things are things you can expect from us.
You know what? You know what we should do in the future whenever we need music from Caleb? We should just do exactly what we just did and send that to him. And it will have like the perfect amalgamation of what all three of us are looking for.
Yeah.
And it'll either be extremely helpful or infinitely frustrating. Mm-hmm. I don't know which, but
it'll definitely be infinitely frustrating. Yeah. I feel like if we were trying to like, because I mean, I don't know about Brooke's notes. I haven't looked at them in a while, but I saw we do sound notes in our editing for our other podcast, which is a fictional podcast. And I've seen our notes, Ian, and we just describe the stupidest shit. And we're like, hey, could you make music out of that? Like, this is a feeling I have.
Somehow it works.
And it works every fucking time. But if we tried to get... We have to go with what we know, which is nothing.
Yeah, like I can't say something like, oh, let's switch to a minor key and do... And I don't know what all those terms mean, so I'm just like, I'm so fucking scared right now, Caleb.
Caleb, I'm so fucking scared.
That's literally the sound notes. I'm so fucking scared.
Yep.
Yeah, y'all are both like always held at gunpoint and just letting him know how bad it's getting.
Yeah, yeah.
Or I'm like, if a star was twinkling, but it was music, what would that sound like?
Yeah, it's like, you know that feeling of chewing your first piece of gum? It's summer vacation, you're 15, and you feel like the world's spread out before you, but you're bored.
Yep.
One that I sent him a lot was, it's like night, but there's blue light coming in the window. And somehow it was right based on that. Yeah,
I think that's all of us. Those are also my notes because it's like, that's what I want. Take it from there.
Yeah. And also if we knew how to do that and knew how to talk about it, we'd do it ourselves.
Yeah.
And we don't. So.
But yeah, so that was a shout out to, fuck. I always forget people's last names and I'm
Richie.
Caleb Richie. That's a shout out to Caleb Richie who does all of our music.
Mm-hmm.
Including the music you just probably heard.
Yeah.
But not the ones that came from our direct mouths.
That.
Our direct mouths.
Yeah.
Yeah. He only does our indirect mouths music.
Fuck. Can't do it all.
So anyway, this is a book podcast. Ish. A book-ish podcast. We're talking about books, but we're also just talking. But we have a very special book today, as we always have a very special book. Ian is going to be our book reader today, our whore.
Mm-hmm. If you will.
Whoer. That's how Danny DeVito says it. Whoer.
It's also how my coworker Jill says it.
John Stewart says it.
Yeah.
Whoer. Our whoer.
Shout out to everyone who says whoer. You make the world go round.
Yeah, honestly, that's what I'm living for. Whoer. But
remember when we were talking about that being a role and I was like, y'all, that's not going to sound good coming out of my voice.
A what?
We're talking about that being like a role on the show.
Yeah, like,
I was like, it's fine when y'all say it. I don't think people are going to like it if I say it.
Ian can't say. Ian physically can probably say whore, but emotionally and morally, he's not going to. So
we haven't tested it, so we probably won't now. We're not sure what might happen.
So it's not a horror.
I've been a white man with a podcast for 6 years now, and we've managed to avoid some of the common downfalls.
Yeah.
So I just don't have it in me.
Yeah. But anyways.
But I've been thinking a lot lately about how men can't really be men anymore.
Oh my God. When you texted that, I was like.
So my daughter that I won't name, she said something about how, like most dudes my age with a podcast are talking about whatever. I was like, oh, you know, it'd be so funny. And she was like, do it.
So he texts our group chat of the three of us and is like, you know, I've been thinking a lot about how men can't be men anymore. And I was like, what the fuck?
I was reading that text very confused until I got to the end. Because I was like, ooh, I might let Bridget respond first.
Well, that's what I was worried about. I was going to just let it sit there. And I was like, they're not going to know what to do. They're not going to know if I'm serious or not. And so, yeah, I was like, oh, by the way, that was a joke from my daughter.
From the daughter.
Yeah.
I feel like what we would have done is just been like, elaborate.
Yeah, yeah. But I feel like it would have taken like 24 hours to get there, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because it's just so hard about how men can't be men anymore.
It's
that it
tough.
Takes a while
it's,
to explain to feeble women brains.
You know, I wouldn't say that. I would just say that, you know, it's a lot of big feelings.
A lot of big feelings.
Alrighty. So, Ian, what book do you have for us today?
We've got Black Sheep by Rachel Harrison. That is the book. And you all talked about something a while back that is going to come into play here. Do you want to explain to the audience the Christian house, wolf house dynamic?
Yeah. So this happened naturally in conversation between the three of us. Brooke and I kind of grew up similarly and quite differently from Ian. Mm-hmm. And I had said in the conversation, we are from the state of Kentucky. I said, if you're from Kentucky, you either grew up in a wolf house or a Christian house. And you could be in a wolf house and like your family still have been Christian, but it's just a different vibe. So like the wolf house is what Brooke and I grew up in. We grew up in wolf houses. And it is very much like a lot of decor that's animals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like Christian house, imagine you're going to have a bathroom that's beach themed.
Yeah.
Lots of Ray Dunn, lots of like live, laugh, love.
Yeah. And definitely the beach themed bathroom is like always a thing with.
Yeah.
It's not always a thing. Like you have some households that are Christian households that don't necessarily do that. But like in a wolf household,
mm-hmm.
you have at one point at least hung up a blanket as a curtain.
Oh, yeah.
Or blankets have been blankets with like wolves on them.
Stars and like the
moons.
Sun and moon.
Yeah.
Moon. Yes, the sun and moon one was really big for a while, too. That is a source of decoration.
I'll say, too, I don't know if you guys would agree with this, but something that I was just thinking is that I think a core difference between wolf house and Christian house, because, again, a wolf house can easily be Christian, is that in a wolf house, the escapism is very different. You're living to die. In a Christian house, you're living for eternal life. There's this sort of like, this life is just a step into the next direction. And in a wolf house, it's like, just live hard, die hard. Like, we are out here to like party. We're here for a good time, not a long time.
Yeah, that's something that's often said within a wolf house too, is we're here for a good time, not a long time. Another thing, I was having a conversation with a friend who grew up Christian house, whereas, as I've said, grown up wolf house. And part of it, too, me and this friend were partying together recently. I went on a Memorial Day trip months back, and I drank like I was in college.
Oh, yeah.
Because I just fucked up on math. So mm-hmm. I was like, oh, this is 1.5 shots per drink. So I'm going to double it and that'll be 2. No, that's fucking 3 shots a drink. So when you have like 5 or 6 with no food,
mm-hmm. it was 4 a.m. and I was still violently throwing up
mm-hmm.
in this house where it was a lot of my husband's coworkers that I'd not hung out with before. I was laying on the ground, on the cold ground, and I was like, I'll be a better woman if you'll mm-hmm. just let me please quit throwing up right now.
And I'm going to tell you right now that it is always a fucking lie. There is no escaping Wolf House.
No.
You don't get different. No. And you will always only even think of turning to God in times of strife. Struggle is the only option. You only pray if you need something, and you will not be talking any other time to any higher power.
And it's the Johnny Cash Sunday morning coming down style prayer mm-hmm. where you are just hung the fuck over. You
Absolutely.
Have the headache, you have the vomiting, and you're like, I know that I'm... You don't necessarily find yourself a bad person, but you're like, I know that I'm not what the prayer house people are, but I will strive to be prayer house, closer to prayer house,
yep.
if you will just let me quit vomiting on the sidewalk.
I think I know what the difference is. I think that Wolf House, I think that prayer house asks for permission and Wolf House asks for forgiveness.
There we go.
That's
okay.
it.
Yeah.
Yep.
We do not, we say, we'll figure it out. And then we say, oops, everybody makes mistakes.
Yep.
Easily, Catholics can fit into Wolf House pretty easily. Like that's a pretty easy transition. They're like, you know, sinned, it be like that. But it's something that you are apologizing for because you fucked up. You will fuck up again.
Catholic asking for forgiveness is Wolf House. Catholic guilt is prayer house.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, we've discussed this with many people after Brooke and I had this conversation because it really resonated with a lot of us. And we've gotten other people's opinions, like culturally throughout different like regions and throughout different countries and families, like what their version of prayer house, Wolf House is. And I thought that was interesting because I feel like it can connect with almost everybody.
Yeah.
Whether your prayer house or whether your Wolf House is like wolf memorabilia, which Brooke and I both experienced. But also I had unicorn memorabilia. My mom loved yeah. unicorns.
A figurine can be in any house, but it's more likely to be fairy, fantasy,
yep.
dragon, a culture that you do not belong to.
Appropriation, if it is Wolf House. Yeah. Yeah, it's definitely like, yeah, wolf howling at the moon and definitely appropriating and all that sort of stuff. But also there's like, for Christmas a couple years ago, I got a lion blanket from my dad with this like paragraph about my dad being like the lion in my life. It's like, and it's like love dad at the bottom. And I was like tearing up. I was like, oh my gosh. But I'm like, this is definitely Wolf House. It's a lion, yeah. but it's Wolf House.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because we've also, I think, heard of like Tiger House.
Tiger blankets.
Yeah. Didn't someone from Mexico was saying that like tigers yes. would be more appropriate there. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's a lot of different options. But let us know what your version of Wolf House and Prayer House is. Because Prayer Houses are also different throughout... Brooke and I just did not grow up in one, so we are not quite sure how to pin on it. I've always known, though, when I would visit friends who had, like, prayer houses or, like, my husband's family and stuff like that, I would, like, the first time I walk in, I'm like, I can't touch anything because if I touch anything, I'm going to fuck it up.
This is not an indicator, but it's pretty unlikely if you grew up with an in-ground pool, you're probably not Wolf House. Now, if it was above ground, if it was inflatable, definitely could be Wolf House. But if that pool was built into the ground, we'll have to look at some other factors.
Yeah. Yeah, my dad actually grew up Wolf House. He, in 2020, reconnected with his high school sweetheart and they got married. They're both in their 70s. She grew up Christian prayer house and he moved into her prayer house. And they do have an in-ground. Which is awesome.
Yeah. I mean, we love visiting a prayer house with an in-ground
oh,
pool.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. it definitely made all of the kids happy when my stepmom got 14 extra grandchildren and we all got a pool that wouldn't kick us out.
Yeah.
For being the very loud and rowdy family we are.
The Wolf House.
The Wolf House family.
And speaking of wolves, we've got sheep, black sheep. Oh, how's that for a transition? Do we like it?
I like it.
We do like
scale
it.
Scale of 1 to 10? It's not 7. A 10. Yeah, it's not a 10.
7.
7?
Yeah. 7.83, though.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a black sheep, you are almost definitely a Wolf House in a prayer house situation. There's some crossover.
Well, we'll find out. We'll find out. All right. Before we find out, I think we're going to probably hear some ads from advertisers.
Figure out if these ads, these companies, it's up to you to determine if these companies are prayer house or Wolf House.
Yeah.
Send it to us in the comments. I don't think there's comments.
No.
There's no comments. No. Just send it to us.
Find a way to you can figure it out.
Figure it out.
Just yell it into the sky and I'll hear it.
Those are some great ads.
Probably. Amazing ads. We definitely know what they are.
Yeah.
We approve every one of them individually.
And we know months and months in advance.
Yeah, God, we're going to get in trouble.
Let's start. We're going to start for the Black Sheep book that Ian is going to be telling us about today. We're going to start with the cover.
Yes. So, Bridget, do you want to describe the cover?
Okay, so Brooke and I haven't seen this yet. So, Brooke, I'm going to describe it to you.
Okay.
It says Rachel Harrison. Honestly, I got to talk about... Okay, don't look, Brooke. I got to talk about how pretty the pinkish white that they chose for this cover to be is. I really like it. It's very like pastel, very like light. It could be, depending on the lighting of your phone, a white or a pink cover. It says Rachel Harrison, and then it says black sheep. There's one in every family. And the black sheep lettering looks like, you know, when you're a kid and you have those sponge letters because you're trying to make your own shirt, but it doesn't, the paint doesn't come down all the way. And there is a sheep that looks like it's been created as an ink spot. Mm. It's like a black sheep, but there's like ink splatter around it with red eyes. And in the middle of the sheep's body, it says a novel in red.
Okay.
So I'm going to show that to Brooke.
Okay, that looks cool.
It does look cool. This is one that, like, because I always have troubles with if I'm going to pick up a book by the cover.
Mm-hmm.
That one, I would at least look at it and be like, okay, I want to read the back. I want to read the inlet and see what it is.
Yeah, I'm not totally sold, but I'm intrigued.
I'm intrigued, yeah. I would give it a I would give it 8 wolf toes. I don't know why that's the first thing that came to my mind. Out of 10 wolf toes.
I'm going to give it 6 wolf toes, but on one paw.
Oh, I love that.
Mm-hmm. All right. Speaking of the cover, or the what do you call it?
Inlet,
sure.
I don't know if that's correct. I just said it confidently and was fucking hoping nobody would call me out on it. Hey,
I took it.
That's what we call them and what all of our listeners call them.
A cynical 20-something must confront her unconventional family's dark secrets in this fiery, irreverent horror. This fiery, irreverent horror novel from the author of Such Sharp Teeth and Cackle. Nobody has a normal family, but Vesper writes is truly something else. I like that name, Vesper.
Vesper is very
good. It's a good name, right?
Yeah. That description is so 2012.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's very relatable.
Yeah. Brooke, after that summary, do you think you'd read it?
Yeah, I'd read it. That's intriguing. I want to see where the story starts and how I feel about it.
Especially, there were times in my life where I would have read that, and I would have probably not even just read the book, like got it from the library. I would have bought it.
Yeah. That sounds like something
Cashola.
I could have made my personality.
Yeah. Got a tattoo from it.
For sure.
At like 19 and be still stuck with it.
Yep.
Although if you got the sheep on the cover as a tattoo, it'd be pretty cool.
Yeah, that'd be, I would get that now.
Yeah, but I'd probably get it really shitty and it'd be on one part of my body where it's just like not looking, not that my body doesn't look great, but some of my tattoos, it's like, oh yeah, you don't have an eating disorder anymore. They look a little different.
Yeah.
When our story begins, we find our narrator, that's Vesper. Sometimes you just bat at the microphone. I do that every single episode.
Can I be honest? I don't like the name Vesper.
That's okay. That's
I know you and Brooke, like, you and Brooke could, like, if we all had to get a child and raise it together, like, as a combined podcast home with all of our spouses and stuff,
yeah.
I think you all would agree on a name.
Well, we would name it Persephone.
Yeah.
For sure.
Actually, we've had this conversation.
Persephone Cornflake or something. Like, just something real weird.
But
I thought Vesper was a last name.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's first name.
It makes me think of a Vespa, like one of those little scooter things.
It kind of makes me think that the book is going to be a lot more Emily in Paris than I bet it is.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Okay.
So when our story begins, we find Vesper. She's on hard times. She hates her job. She feels a general dissatisfaction with life. She's a millennial, you know? That's... Mm-hmm. That's just what she is. She's working as a server in a sports bar kind of place. And when we meet her, her coworker is asking her to cover her section while she like tries to kind of sneak off and go hang with her boyfriend.
Mm.
So Vesper tells her coworker that her boyfriend is like just trash and she needs to find someone else. And Vesper's coworker tells her that she's not, and this is a quote, she's not pretty enough to be that mean.
Oh, so, my God.
And it goes on to say, which is saying something because she's really pretty. So.
Who says that?
That is the coworker talking to her.
Does the coworker say she's really pretty or is that the narrator?
The coworker says
okay.
that. Yeah.
Okay. I needed to know exactly how
so
this
So the coworker's
worked.
Like, you're really pretty.
But you're not
pretty enough.
I feel like it would. I feel like it would work better if those lines were reversed. Yeah.
But, yeah.
So even after that, Vesper agrees to cover for her. And when that happens, and this is all just this intro scene, right? So I'm going to spend a little time on it because it's where we get to know her for the first time. This group of bros in like their late 20s walks in, maybe early 30s. We don't know their actual ages. That's just kind of the vibe I'm getting from them.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys are terrible, and she can tell right away. Now, we're about to learn something really interesting about Vesper. One of these bros asks her if she knows that she looks like this old horror movie scream queen from like 20 years ago. This is where we find out that the actress he's talking about is actually Vesper's mom.
Mm.
Vesper's estranged mother. So she's left her family. She hasn't spoken to them in quite some time. And she gets this every now and then.
Mm-hmm.
So she gets a lot of, just kind of a lot of pleasure out of like disowning her mom and just saying like, nope, don't know who that is. That sort of thing. But we're going to take a little trip down memory lane first and learn a little bit about her family. It's all very vague and it's cryptic at this point because it's a book. And then, you know, onions and such.
Books, onions.
Books,
onions and such.
Books, onions, whatever.
You're trying to make onions a thing.
Am I?
This book is so onions.
It's so onions.
This book is so onions. So razor.
So, oh God. So we get the impression that it's this very religious family and that she had this very sheltered upbringing as a kid, which is true. There's this really great line. And as someone who grew up in a prayer house and grew up like super heavy in church and isn't anymore, this passage like really resonated with me. The first 18 years of her life, she was doted on and told every day that she was adored and loved. But since she left her family in the church, every single day, the world has assured her that she is neither.
Mm.
Very good line.
So it's, is it the mom that grew up religious or Vesper?
Vesper.
So her mom was a scream queen.
Yep.
But was a religious scream queen.
She kind of like, we'll find this out later on, but okay, she kind of like left and became the other. So we might get the impression that she grew up in this healthy environment. You know, when she talks about her family in the church, there's this darkness and this heaviness over it too. So we'll get more into what that is later on. But we get the impression that it's something that was really formative for her. And at some point, it stopped being formative for her. Well, I don't think things can stop being formative. You know what I mean? You get what I'm saying. Okay, so we're back in the present, and Vesper is trying to get through the night serving this table of awful bros. And one of them has just asked about her mom. She says that she doesn't know who she's talking about, who they're talking about. And one of the guys just kind of, as bros do to service workers, starts to like come on to her, starts to hit on her, and then just kind of grabs a full hand of ass cheek.
Mm-hmm.
Just smacks it. She pulls away. She's furious. He tries to like pull her down on his lap and shit. She pulls away. She's mad. She goes back into the back. They'd ordered these like nachos before this sexual assault happened.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just sorry.
They ordered nachos before the sexual assault. It's just the fact that it's not a surprising line, having worked in like the food industry before, and also just having walked down the street before and had that happen to me. Like, but just there was nachos.
There were nachos.
It's exactly how girls talk about it too. Yeah. They'll be like, well, so before the sexual assault, the nachos.
Right. So they ordered nachos. She goes in the back. She microwaves this nacho cheese. She brings it out, kind of drops it on the table and goes. But the heat inside the cheese, I guess, boils up and kind of like sprays on dude's face and like gives him pretty serious like third degree burns or whatever. Now, they're not supposed to microwave the nacho cheese for this exact reason. Gets real into the weeds about the rules in this restaurant for a minute. Uh-huh. But as a result, she gets fired.
Mm-hmm.
So Vesper loses a job she didn't really like, but still needed. And she's taking the bus home after getting fired and getting sexually assaulted. So not a good night. Bad night.
I agree. I just love, it's a bad night.
It's a bad night. It's a bad night. I don't know how to talk about this. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
No. It's just a really relatable bad night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some guy gropes you and you microwave his nacho cheese and then you get fucking fired.
Yeah. She's the one that gets fired.
I went to the movies alone last night and was in a very long line for popcorn. And there were these very young girls, a few, you know, bunch of people behind me. And they were discussing something, but I just hear one of them's like, babe. That's SA. That was sexual assault. And she's like, really? And she was like, yeah, you got sexually assaulted, babe. That's just like so the way real. They were discussing it. I was like, oh, this is so. We were girls together.
We were girls together. And it's like tragically wholesome.
Yeah.
It's like such a horrible thing, but so very real.
It was. Yeah. I was like, that's awful. But I just love the fact that they're like making this girl laugh and stuff. So just the way that. Ian, hearing it from you too, it's just like, this is, we're all living. We're all making it through.
Well, she is making it through. She gets on the bus. She goes home. She gets off on her stop and something just feels off about the night. She can't place it. When she gets home, she finds an envelope against her door. It's a red envelope. And this means something to her because she immediately knows who it's from. We don't know the significance of it yet. We also realize at this point that she seems more than just estranged from her family. She's hiding from them.
Mm.
And we're not sure why. We know this because when she sees the envelope, her first thought is, they've known where I am this whole time.
Hmm.
So we're going to take another little detour into the past and learn some new characters there are two other people she mentions in this little passage after finding the envelope that she misses from back home, genuinely seems to miss. One of them is Brody. Brody was her biggest crush, and of course his name is Brody.
Mm-hmm.
Brody's her biggest crush, and everyone in the community like assumed that they would be married someday. You know, they were kind of those kids. The other person is Rosie. That was her best friend. When she opens up the envelope that was waiting for her on the door, it's an invitation to Brody and Rosie's wedding.
Oh, I fucking swear. That's some bullshit.
I want you to, Bridget, can you read my note in here?
Okay. I can. Hold on. I got to pull the computer up to me. It says, pause for oof.
Yeah.
Oof.
All right. After the wedding invitation, Vesper goes back and forth for a while about whether she's going to go. And she eventually decides that she is going to go out of curiosity and a healthy dose of spite.
Mm-hmm.
So she's taken this news in. We learn a little bit more about the town and the church community that she grew up in. It's very rural sounding. It's in New Jersey, but like not coastal New Jersey, kind of like Garden State, New Jersey, you know, more like farmland. Closer to Pennsylvania. She's thinking of Rosie and she's thinking about like walking through fields, picking flowers. It's all very wholesome. She thinks about Brody and she remembers the last night before she left the church, their community and their town forever, or we think forever. She tries to get Brody to come with her, but Brody chooses the church and that life over her. Now, we're going to skip a lot of things here for the sake of time that are worth reading on your own. I strongly recommend it. But we're skipping some story, and we're going to end up being at the wedding. She's decided to go.
What's she wearing?
Well, we'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay, can we pause so I can pee?
We can.
Okay.
That needs to be every ad transition.
Yep.
That's actually... All right.
All right. How you feeling?
Feeling good.
Awesome.
Much better since I pissed.
All right. Let's fast forward. And Vesper is on her way home to the wedding of her first love and her childhood best friend. When she gets home, she's walking up to a house where everyone is gathering for like the pre-wedding festivities. Vesper sees her mom there. She sees Rosie and Brody, among other people. It's a big group. Vesper still doesn't know who sent the invitation to her. It wasn't signed. So when she gets there, she sees the surprise from her mom and from Rosie. So she doesn't get the impression that either of them sent it. And we get the impression that this is the kind of place that when you leave, you are out, right? So it's kind of a mystery. Rosie is surprised and happy to see her. And Vesper, kind of despite herself, is glad to see Rosie too when she gets back there and she's with her, you know, brings up all those memories and that connection. When the actual event begins, someone asks the crowd who would like to say the blessing to get them started. Vesper's mom, being completely petty, like says out loud to the group, "Why don't you do it, Vesper?" Which is something that like my family used to do sometimes. I don't think it was being petty. I think they thought that like they could make me believe stuff again.
That you'd feel the spirit once you start talking about it.
Yeah, and like I mean, there's a lot of emotions that go into that, especially like having a child, you know, leave. I get why that happens and why that's troubling. I don't hold it against anybody, but yeah, that's a thing that happened a lot. There's this like moment of embarrassment and panic. She's obviously not going to do it, but then a little bit like too enthusiastically, Brody kind of speaks up and says that he'll do it. And, you know, he's like kind of like saving her from the situation kind of thing. This happens and it kind of begs the question for Vesper whether or not he like still has feelings for her. I don't know. It makes a lot more sense in the text of the book, but
it makes me feel like I would be reading that and be thinking that he still had feelings for her.
Yeah.
Like I don't feel directed by the book to feel that. I'm like, did he send this invitation?
Yeah. There's a little bit more nuance in it. There's a little bit more build. than what I'm able to do here. So Brody kind of like takes over, kind of diffuses the situation and starts his prayer. As he finishes it, you know, he kind of ramps up and it's this whole thing, you know, and he projects out in this like authoritative tone, "Hail Satan." And then like a call and response from everyone else in the house, they all say back to him, "Hail Satan."
I see.
So,
what do we think? Wolf House or Prayer House?
I still think it's a version of Prayer House.
I agree.
It's just the Satanist version of Prayer House.
Yeah. It can be any religion.
Yeah.
That's where we are right now. Let's we'll revisit this in a little bit.
Yeah.
Oh.
So, we just learned that Vesper's family, the whole community where she grew up, was like some kind of satanic church, satanic like insular community. Like the whole town is kind of this way, but it's not a very big town. It's a good little twist. I don't know. I didn't see it coming.
Mm-hmm. A lot of Slayer playing all the time.
Oh, I don't know. I actually don't Cannibal get the Corpse. Impression. No, I don't get the impression. These are like older people.
It's like suburban satanic.
Yeah, yeah. This is like rural farmland, like sustenance farmers.
Yeah, that's like the movie Longlegs, which I've watched recently. It delves on Satanism, but to like get the point across, they have a picture of Ian Curtis from Joy Division.
Was Joy Division a big satanic band?
I really don't think
I don't think so either.
It was just in the background, but I picked up on it and I was like, is that Ian Curtis?
Look, that's a twist on Joy Division that I'd never considered.
Yeah.
Not that I consider Joy Division a lot, but
I feel like, and this is not a roast of anyone, I feel like the vibe of these Satanists in the way that you're describing them, Ian, is definitely Hanson. Like, I could see that existing in this culture. Like, the kids would be, like, allowed to listen to that, and everyone would be like, no, they're totally Satanists. They just don't want the world to know, and, like, trying to find meaning in it as opposed to trying to find meaning to ban the songs.
Well, we'll see. We'll see.
Is Hanson Mbop?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. And so much more. God, Bridget.
Well, I need a shirt that's, like, a picture of, like, satanic imagery, and it just says, like, Hanson Mbop. Somebody make that.
I'll write that down.
So, if this was a movie, this next scene, I imagine, would be, like, the frame roaming through a group of people, you know, a party in a house or something. And they are accenting certain voices before moving on and then accenting other voices, you know? And there are a couple of guys talking like about how the Yankees are doing this season, stuff like that. It's like a very normal conversation that you would see at any kind of like wedding gathering or function like this. Vesper kind of goes on to explain as the narrator that this is one of the main reasons she never told anyone that she grew up in a satanic community. It's because of things like this. They never get past the shock of it or the imagery of it, and they don't understand that it's a pretty boring life.
Mm.
It's impossible to like get them to understand that it's just like day-to-day life, you know? So as we go on, we're going to learn all those assumptions that we made early on about this being like this fundamental, you know, kind of Christian religion community, whatever. It's all basically still the same thing, mm-hmm. right? It's just a different God that they're worshiping. So they have their town. They're pretty much self-sufficient. They do interact with the outside world. It's not like a Mennonite or like an Amish situation, even though they do interact with the outside mm-hmm. world. But they're not that insular. They go to town. They mm-hmm. you know people outside of the community. But Vesper runs into these old school friends that she had, and they make small talk. We learned that like a couple of other people that she knew when she was little have left the community like she did, mm-hmm. not necessarily as suddenly or on quite so bad terms as Vesper did. We're still not quite sure what those terms are yet. But there's also mention of this girl named Jane, and Jane also left the community. We linger on her for a little bit. We'll come back to her later. During the event, Vesper disappears outside to get some fresh air on the porch, and Rosie comes to find her. They have this like heart-to-heart about the whole Brody situation and about them getting together after Vesper left, the conversation's pretty frank and candid. You know, Vesper chose to leave. She knew what leaving meant. Brody was left. There's not a lot of them, right? If you want to get married, start a family, you know, you got the people that are here. So there's this great line where Vesper like thinks about how nice it is to feel known for the first time in a long time when she's talking to Rosie, even though she doesn't relate to these people anymore. She's still, there's a part of her that only they can know. And I kind of feel that too a little bit, right? At the end of the night, Vesper's mom, remember that scream queen movie star stuff from years gone by? She calls her aside and digs her nails like into Vesper's arm and like pulls her out of the room. Vesper's mom is a true believer. She is the most ardent of believers, right? Because she demands to, or she demands to know like what she's doing there, why she's coming back, says she shouldn't be there. She chose to leave. Someone breaks off from the community that they're supposed to like stay gone, you know? She demands to know if she's coming back for Brody to make trouble for the whole wedding. And I mean, maybe a little bit, right? So the conversation ends with Vesper's mom saying, you know how to leave quietly. You've done it before. It's time that you do it again.
Damn.
Yeah,
that pretty rough. Cold.
Pretty rough. Vesper insists she's not going to leave, mostly out of spite, but she does go back home, and back home is her mom's house, right?
Oh.
And she storms off, she goes home, and she finds her old bedroom and decides to call it a night.
That's crazy.
I know,
right?
She
just goes back to her mom's house and is like, I'm staying here after a fight with her mom.
Of everything that we've read so far in this book, that is the thing that felt most unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. We get a lot of flashbacks here. She's walking through the house. Now, we're going to go back to Wolf House, Prayer House here. I'm going to describe the house to you. Inside her mom's house, it feels pretty normal, except all the quilts and blankets have pentagrams instead of like other stuff on them. So, you know, we're all familiar with the Wolf Howling at the Moon blanket, right? That would just be the same kind of pattern, but like with pentagrams on it and like other iconography.
No, it's different.
Yeah.
Okay. So here is the thing. Quilting is like very big in my family. Like when there's a new baby, they get a quilt made for them and stuff. And like quilts were like something for like weddings and all that shit. For me, a quilt is a toss up. It could be Prayer House. It could be Wolf House. I think it depends on how you acquire the quilt, but I imagine like an old school looking quilt, but that with pentagrams on it, but not the like wolf one.
Okay.
Wolf ones are like.
You buy them at Walmart.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. That's fair.
Yeah.
Okay.
And quilts, like usually it's like tons of hours put into it. I've been quilting lately, but yeah. That's besides the point. I've been quilting pentagrams. I haven't been, but I should now.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I still can't tell if it's...
Yeah, let's hear some more.
Okay,
yeah.
All right. I think our listeners should, you know, find us on Twitter, TikTok, wherever else we are. Mm-hmm. Let us know what you're thinking so far. Is this a Prayer House, Wolf House situation? Where did you grow up?
Yeah, let us know.
So Vesper lays down to go to bed, and her thoughts turn toward someone else, someone that we haven't met yet. They're going to turn toward her father. She has these very warm, very fond memories of him. She describes him as having like a movie star smile, and remembering that her mom was a movie star. I kind of got the impression that this was like a Hollywood guy. I don't know if he's another actor, or just somebody, you know, in the industry. We don't know yet, but he's not in the picture. We don't know why. Vesper drifts off to sleep, and she remembers being a kid sitting on the porch waiting for him to come home as the night grows later and later until eventually... she goes inside, never comes home. She wakes up in the middle of the night in her old bedroom. She's disoriented for a minute, and it takes her a little while to figure out where she is and why she's there. Once she does, she gets up and she walks around the house. It's still dark. It's the middle of the night. Her mom has come home in the meantime because she can see that like things have changed in the house. So her mom's asleep somewhere in the house. A lot of the house is decorated with like souvenirs from her mom's movies. So there's one photo in particular that creeps Vesper out. in one of her mom's movies, there's this painting that's cursed, and it's a painting of a man screaming. In the movie, her mom's character tries to get rid of it, kind of like predictably. Her mom's character like walks into a room after she's like tried to burn it or like throw it away or something, and it's like hanging back up where it's like not supposed to be. She takes it outside. She like tries to burn it again or throw it away again or whatever she does, and it starts to appear in the background of the movie, except it's the man screaming, but not in the painting.
Oh.
So he's like over her shoulder somewhere or like in across the street or something. He gets closer and closer over the course of the movie, and eventually, predictably, the screaming man kills her. This is like one of the souvenirs from the movie. It's hanging up in the house. Other stuff like that. There's like masks and stuff like that from some of her movies around. What are we thinking?
This feels tough.
Yeah.
Because a crucifix on the wall can be both houses. Like, there's a certain aggressive, feverish iconography that definitely is familiar for Wolf House. But then I'm also thinking about sports memorabilia, which feels Prayer House.
Okay.
You know, the way that people will have like tickets to games and posters of their teams and signed stuff. I'm still not sure.
I think one of the differences, because having a lot of like you said, iconography, or having a lot of collectibles and stuff like that can be from either house. But I feel like if you are Wolf House, you're just hanging it up. Like, you don't have anything on your poster. You don't have any of those frames.
Mm.
And I feel like with Prayer House, you've had it framed.
I feel like the difference, too, is these aren't just horror movie posters. These are, like, connected to the person who lives there. So that's the thing, too. I feel like it's very, something that can be very Wolf House is, like, having posters of, like, your favorite TV shows and stuff. Like, a bunch of Quentin Tarantino posters feels very Wolf House to me. But in Prayer House, like, these are mementos of life.
The most insufferable Wolf House, I would say.
Yes. There's no real winner between Wolf House and Prayer House.
I've not read the book, but when I'm imagining this in my mind, it still feels very Prayer House to me, because instead of just being like thumbtacked on the wall, I'm imagining that these horror movie posters and these, they're in like white frames, which white is always like a big Prayer House thing.
Okay.
So it's like a white frame around.
I've got to be honest, I thought that I'd be like winning you all over by now to this being Wolf House, but I'm not. I'm shocked. I'm surprised. I'm interested to see where this goes from here.
Yeah, there's still time.
Okay, we'll see. So she's walking through the house. There's all this, you know, creepy stuff up on the walls from her mom's movies. She's not a big fan of her mom's movies, we learn. Like elsewhere in the book, I'm not going to talk about it because it's not, you know, kind of worth bringing up in this context. But she's walking around. She's a little, you know, spooked, a little eerie feeling. She just has this like vague feeling that someone's watching her. Then she hears something at one of the windows and she goes to look.
If this is fucking Brody, I'm going to freak out.
It's Brody.
Oh God.
He's come to see her. So she goes out on the porch and they have this like short, tense exchange for Brody. Like, he tells her that, you know, he needs her to know that like he doesn't hate her or whatever, that he, you know, like still likes her and respects her. And they talk about Rosie. She asked why it had to be her, but like also she left, you know, like you kind of lose your say over that when you cut ties. But then everything kind of like takes a turn when Brody like reaches up, like puts a hand on her face and like goes in for a kiss.
Ugh.
What the fuck?
Yeah. Yeah. And she kisses him back.
Well, she's not married.
No.
He
is. But still.
I mean, she's being a dick.
Yeah. She is not the hero of this story. But yeah, everyone's kind of awful.
And this feels so orchestrated on his part. He's being so fucking weird.
Oh, yeah. He's been thinking about it ever since he saw her.
Oh, my God.
So she kind of like comes to her senses. She cuts it off, brings up Rosie, and like, Brody's like still kind of down, and she's like, no, and goes back inside. He leaves. After this encounter, she like goes back upstairs, and there's an open window in her bedroom, and things have been moved around. Her mom's still asleep, so we know that she didn't do it. But who did? Brody hasn't had time. He couldn't go around. She's also upstairs.
I'm like, was this all a setup? Was that Rosie? I'm like,
who knows? Who knows? Something I do know is that the people who buy ad spots on our podcast, they want you to live in a wolf house or a prayer house, and they want to sell you things to make that happen. I feel that in my bones.
Yeah, I feel good about that.
I feel that they really want to, whichever one you choose, they have a solution for you.
Yes.
I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can all agree there.
Mm-hmm.
All right, excellent. Can I make a marker so that you know where the ad drop is?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't think so. We're in OBS.
Oh,
I see. Yeah, that picked up.
All right, ready?
Yep.
All right, we're coming back in on the next day. It's the morning of the wedding, and Vesper is in the kitchen. Since her mom's house is like the biggest house in the community, it's sort of used as like a staging ground for all these events.
Mm.
So it's also like the staging ground for the wedding. Rosie and all of her bridesmaids are there. They've gone off to another part of the house to do whatever you do before a satanic wedding. And Vesper is in the kitchen with her aunt, Grace. This is another new character. Grace is very different from Vesper's mom. She's not like going to be super judgmental. She's happy to see her. She's missed her. Grace is very warm, very kind. We get this cute little exchange between the two of them, and we get the impression that Grace maybe sent the invitation. We're going to be wrong about that, but that's the impression that we get. Vesper's mom barges in. I guess she barges in. I don't know if you barge into your own house or you just like walk in.
I think this woman barges into every place she goes.
Yeah, you're probably right. So she comes in the kitchen and asks Vesper if she brought an appropriate dress for the wedding. Vesper says yes. And we learn pretty quickly that Vesper brought what she describes as a revenge dress.
Oh.
So she bought it the day after the invitation when she was still mad, and she's bought it now. That's the dress, right? Because she doesn't have a job. There's no more money.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So... do I describe it here? I can't tell if I describe it yet. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. For the listeners, every time I'm writing something and I have to write clothing, I usually just ask Bridget and Brooke to tell me what to do. So
tell you what the clothing is.
Yeah, there's a whole 13 episode where for some reason it revolves around clothing for a funeral quite a bit. And I was just like, what the fuck am I doing? I don't know how to write this. Why did I decide to do this?
What is a blouse?
Yeah.
Well, and it's because you knew it was important, and you knew that these characters would think it was important and would talk about it, and then you just needed some research assistance to help out.
Yeah.
You can't know everything.
That's how men get in trouble writing women.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to fucking fall for it.
You got to just maybe know a single one.
You got to know some.
Before you try to write them.
You can ask them.
Yeah. I feel like I'm very prepared for a satanic wedding, but what is it? What is she wearing?
We're going to get there.
Okay.
So her mom has like never told her his name. We're talking about her dad.
Okay.
So she's still like kind of thinking about it from last night. And
so she remembers her dad, but very young.
Very young. And like her mom's always been like real cagey about it. Doesn't even know his name. Her mom knows his name, but she doesn't know her dad's name. She decides that while everyone's kind of busy getting Rosie ready for the wedding, her mom included, she's going to snoop around and see what she can find.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the last chance she gets to do it. So she does that, but she comes up empty-handed, and the entire ordeal like ends up with her being caught like in a closet by her mom where she's like not supposed to be. It's like clear she's snooping. So she kind of gets like banished back to the main room in the house and like told to stay there until it's time for her to get ready. Rosie still thinks that she and Vesper are like all good after their conversation they had. And she's like giddy and she's talking about how excited she is to be like married to Brody, and it's all like getting under Vesper's skin. Vesper, like, is thinking about Brody kissing her last night, and she wants to bring it up and, like, ruin the whole thing, but she decides not to. During this part of the story, we're also, like, interspersing some background about the community and their beliefs. We're learning a little bit about it through all of these conversations. I just fucking hit the mic again.
Got a lot of feelings.
I'm talking with my hands. So I'm going to skip over a lot of it, but there's some important things. A lot of these beliefs, like, sound very Protestant or Catholic. Mm-hmm. They believe in a hell, but that hell is for people who don't believe in their God being God, or, you know, like, being the higher power. They have a lot of the same traditions and rituals. They're just kind of inversed, you know? Mm-hmm. And she wonders for the first time if everyone else in this room with her believes that she's going to, like, burn in hell for her non-belief. It's a pretty relatable thought in my world, right?
Yeah.
She imagines that some of them are talking about it when she's not around. This is, like, what's going to color what happens next. And what happens next is that Rosie is all fitted up in her dress and comes in and shows everybody, and everyone's like, oh my God, it's amazing, and comes, like, around to Vesper's time to, like, react to it. And Vesper says that it is, quote, nice.
Yeah.
No matter what the context is, no matter what religious background or...
I mean, I think I can see why Vesper hasn't made a lot of friends since leaving this community. I'm like, yeah, girl, nobody is going to want you unless they have to hang out with you.
You want to like her, and she just, like, doesn't let you.
She is such a bitch.
So she realizes what she's done. She regrets it immediately. Like, Rosie's face just falls, you know. She tries to clean it up, but the damage is done. Some more eerie things happen around the house. There's this quiet moment. Some, like, daytime spooky stuff happens, which is kind of cool. I always love daytime scares. I'm not going to get into a lot of them because I want our listeners to read the book and get some of the spooks. When she gets back to her bedroom, she finds that she's got a bunch of missed calls and texts on her phone. They are from Carrie, that coworker that she had that was, like, trying to get her to cover that shift that night we met her, right? She's getting in touch with her because their old boss, the one that fired Vesper, has now been fired himself. They're short-staffed, and she thinks that she can get her job back.
I knew Carrie was a real one from the minute we met her. Because Vesper needs to be told to mind her own business.
Yeah. So, it looks like I did not make notes about what Vesper's dress was. If that's later on, then I will correct this. But I remember vaguely it being, like, very low cut in the front, like a really high slit, just very, like, it was, like, red, like, pretty bright red, I think.
Same as any revenge dress, not really any specific satanic necessity.
I had never heard the term revenge dress until I read this book, but I immediately knew what it was.
Bridget is so incredulous right now.
She just gave me... I've said a lot of weird shit in front of Bridget, and she just gave me the look like I'd said the weirdest thing.
Well, in pop culture, what the revenge dress, like, really was, like, what really set off what people calling it a revenge dress... was the dress that Princess Di wore.
I've heard about that.
Yeah. So that's the revenge dress. And that's when people started. It's, you know, from then on, it was like, oh, she's wearing an outfit to be like, look at me and look at you.
And Princess Di deserved to wear.
Oh, yeah.
Vesper, maybe not, but.
No.
Princess Di.
And she did revenge dress so good.
She rocked the revenge dress.
So the wedding goes off more or less like a traditional wedding. Like I said, a lot of these, like, rituals they have, this is pretty much like the same thing, but just, like, substituting in different things, right? So, you know, there's references to God. They're replaced by references to Satan. Otherwise, it's pretty much the same, including the sacrificing of a goat, which honestly is my favorite part of Bridget's wedding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bridget, where did you all get the goat? Because, like, did you steal it like you're supposed to based on tradition? It's, like, wild because, like, if a goat goes missing and there's a wedding that night, everyone knows who did it. So you've got to travel, like, a ways to get your goat. That way, it is plausible deniability, right?
So, actually, that goat was my fourth cousin.
Wow.
That is
special.
That's
a really special... Your family's so close.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's really beautiful.
That's beautiful. All right, back to the story. During the wedding, Vesper's mind wanders, and she thinks about her dad again. The last time that she saw him, she was 9 years old. He came to the community.
And she doesn't know his name?
I guess not. He came to the community for a visit.
She is so fucking self-absorbed. It's crazy.
Well, let's hold on for a second. So he comes to visit at the community where she's living with her mom. And the visit is like really controlled, right? Mm. So they're on the porch. They don't go inside. Okay. All of the like pentagrams and iconography have been hidden away. While they're alone on the porch, she asks him if she can go live with him. And we don't know why, but he says that she can't. And like we get the impression that this isn't his choice somehow. Between the wedding and the reception, Vesper has a drink and she starts to feel unwell. She goes inside. She finds like someone she knows and trusts. And I think it's Aunt Grace, actually. And she gives her some medicine. She goes to the bathroom. She pees. Her urine is distressingly dark.
Mm.
After sitting down for a while, she feels a little bit better. She gets a little hydration going on. They've been out in the hot sun all day. Vesper goes back to like rejoin the wedding. And she talked to Rosie for a minute. And then things get like really strange.
Mm.
Something is very wrong. People start falling onto the floor. And it feels like maybe there's been some poisoning or something going on with the drinks.
Mm-hmm.
Up ahead, there's a man who seems to be like the source of all this distress. She doesn't know who he is or why all this is going on. People start screaming, though, and they start screaming, "Hail Satan," over and over again. And then something clicks. Just as like this chapter is about to end, she looks up at him and she whispers something. She whispers, "Dad?" All right. So we're like a third of the way through the book. This is nowhere near like the end. We are just getting started. I'm going to cut it off right here. So the book is Black Sheep by Rachel Harrison. Pick it up wherever you get books. I'm going to tell Brooke and Bridget the ending. We're going to censor that on the main feed. But stay tuned afterwards for Brooke and Bridget's reactions on the other side. You all are about to learn who her dad is, who invited her to the wedding, and how this whole thing turns out. You however you think it's going to turn out, you don't know how it's going to turn out yet. So stay tuned for that. Just a reminder, our patrons get the entire uninterrupted episode. You can find that at patreon.com/edgingthepodcast. And here we go. No.
Okay.
Yes.
Oh, oh shit.
I knew it.
God damn. I just smacked a cup full of pens and some scissors here.
Oh.
Oh my God, the same thing happened at my Sweet 16.
I was going to say, I remember.
It's not what I thought.
I didn't, yeah, not what you think.
I like it.
I like it too.
I love the, you know, not only with male characters or like stuff like that, but I also love that there can be a female character that's the main character that I just totally don't fucking like.
Yeah.
An unreliable.
We love the, this is truly feminism. We love being able to just see an imperfect, unreliable, unlikable female character. Good for her.
Good for her that she just seems to kind of suck.
I'm still rooting for her, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
But like,
I'd go to hell with her. But like,
yeah, I don't really want to like go on a road trip with her.
Oh God, no.
Yeah.
It'd be the most insufferable road trip.
Worst coworker ever.
Worst coworker ever.
You're pretty, but you're not that pretty.
honestly, yeah, I'm going to give this book a you're pretty, but you're not that pretty.
Okay. Is that like a...
Sort of like an award.
Yeah, I like that award.
Yeah.
Nine toes, wolf toes out of 10 wolf toes.
Yeah, I'm going to say... I'm going to agree with 9 out of 10. We still have 6 on 1 paw.
Okay.
And I want to read this book.
Same.
Yeah, I want to know everything that I don't know.
There's a lot you don't know still. And you can find that out in Black Sheep by Rachel Harrison.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah.
That's got it. All right. You ready? We're going to order a pizza, right?
Oh, yeah.
We're going to order a pizza. Before, yes. Bye.